Ukraine forces in retreat under heavy Russian shelling and advancing troops.
Russian forces are trying to occupy more territory in the northeast.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Kyiv has some downtime on stage at a bar playing with the band. And robots are going to sea, doing dangerous jobs, and some that are tedious and mundane.
For scientific research or for environmental, we got water samplers or sensors. For search and rescues, you can use sonars, imaging sonars, to detect bodies.
Today is Wednesday, May 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. In response to heavy Russian fire and advances, Ukrainian troops are falling back and regrouping, the latest now from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Russian forces are trying to occupy more territory in the northeast to create a bridgehead for further actions towards the city of Kharkiv. Analysts estimate that Russian forces will maintain a high rate of attack across eastern Ukraine to gain more advantage. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, also in Kyiv on Tuesday, talked about the new Russian offensive.
Sending wave after wave of Russian soldiers, Iranian drones, North Korean artillery, and tanks, missiles, and fighter jets built with machines and parts supplied by China.
Blinken said he rejects the idea that Russia can outwait the West.
We sometimes hear that time is on Putin's side, that Russia's bigger population, Putin's willingness to throw more Russians into a meat grinder of his own making and sink more of Russia's resources into trying to subjugate Ukraine means that Russia can't lose. In fact, Russia's been losing the battle to control Ukraine's destiny for 20 years. And Putin has it wrong. Time is on Ukraine's side.
In fact, Blinken said there's one more crucial step the West can take.
Making Russia pay for Ukraine's recovery and reconstruction. What Putin destroyed, Russia should and must pay to rebuild. It's what international law demands. It's what the Ukrainian people deserve. Our Congress has given us the power to seize Russian assets in the United States. We intend to use it. We're working with our G7 partners to see that Russia's immobilized sovereign assets are used to remedy the damage that Putin continues to cause. The G7 can unlock billions of dollars and send a powerful message to Putin that time is not on his side.
After the day was done, Secretary Blinken went to a bar in Kyiv and joined the band on stage to sing Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World. There's something you don't see every day. Also related to the Ukraine-Russian war, the first NATO exercise to be held in Sweden is underway. About 800 paratroopers from the United States, Spain, Hungary, and Italy training to deter any potential aggression. Sweden joined NATO in March, something Russia didn't want to see happen. Here's VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief, Marislova Gangadza, at the training ground in Sweden.
Swift Response is part of Defender 24, the largest U.S.-led NATO exercise in Europe, encompassing more than 17,000 U.S. and 23,000 multinational service members from over 20 allied and partner nations. The training aims to enhance NATO's deterrence capabilities, says U.S. European Command Director Major General James Cressel, who leads the exercise. He notes the strengthening of NATO with Sweden's inclusion as a 32nd member.
NATO is deterring against any chronic threat.
Military officials say Russian aggression against Ukraine has dramatically altered the security environment in Europe. Brigadier General Robert McBride is Deputy Commanding General of the U.S. Army's 11th Airborne Division.
Well, first of all, there's two threats that we know of in the world right now. There's the pacing threat, which is China. And then obviously there's the threat of Russia. And we've seen their aggression that they're going through in Ukraine right now.
The new threats prompted Finland and Sweden to join the alliance and push NATO member states to increase their defense spending. Sweden brings to NATO a well-equipped military with the largest air force in the Nordic-Baltic region. Military officials say the country's navy, the largest in the Baltic, is equipped with cutting-edge submarines designed for shallow waters. Anders Jonsson is commander of a wing in the Swedish Air Force.
As a small country, we have a small armed forces, of course, but our units and our capabilities are strong.
With Sweden's inclusion, NATO boosts its defense posture and enhances control over the Baltic and the Arctic regions. This membership grants Allied access to the strategically significant Kola Peninsula, critical for countering Russian military presence. Giuseppe Folgore is a soldier in the Italian army.
I think it's very, very important for the brigade, and not only for the brigade, but for the whole NATO, because we can increase our bond between the airborne companies, and we create and raise our standards, our skills, and we can create a better interoperability, and we can increase our joint and international interaction.
Leon Bester Kirchner is a paratrooper with the U.S. 173rd Airborne Brigade.
Thank you, Sweden, for like hosting us. Allow us to come out here and utilize this training site. It's definitely something that we needed a lot. We're going to learn a lot of lessons coming from here, all the way down from the individual level all the way up.
Scheduled to continue until May 31st, Swift Response is linked to NATO's Steadfast Defender exercise alongside national exercises such as Spring Strike in Sweden, Quadria South in Germany, and Dacia 24 in Romania. That will feature one of the largest airborne operations since World War II. Borislava Gungadze, VOA News, Sweden.
Protesters shut down major intersections in the Georgian capital after the foreign agent law advanced. Georgia's parliament on Tuesday passed the third and final reading of the bill, clearing a major hurdle on its way to becoming law. The draft now goes to President Salome Zurabishvili, who said she will veto it. But her decision can be overridden by another vote in parliament, controlled by the ruling party and its allies. Still to come on International Edition, President Biden says China isn't competing, it's cheating. He raised the tariffs on some of their goods. We'll have a conversation about that coming up. We're following these other stories from around the world. Argentina's annual inflation rate hit near 290% in April, the highest in decades, but showed signs of cresting as the monthly rate slowed more than analysts expected amid tough austerity drives by the libertarian president Javier Milei. A large wildfire is slowly approaching the major Canadian oil sands city of Fort McMurray. About 6,000 people in four suburbs have been told to evacuate by local officials. The U.S. Justice Department said late on Tuesday that the Boeing company has breached its obligations in a 2021 agreement that shielded the plane maker from criminal prosecutions over fatal 737 MAX crashes in 2018 and 2019. The Justice Department said Boeing is now subject to prosecution. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, the re-election campaign for President Joe Biden has launched a digital ad aimed at Latino voters, seeking to remind them of former President Donald Trump's controversial family separation policy at the U.S.-Mexico border. VOA's immigration reporter, Pauline Barros, has more.
With immigration on voters' minds this presidential election season, the Biden campaign is ramping up efforts to remind them of the Trump administration policies on the issue.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime.
A 50-second ad named Ripped Apart shows images of children crying and followed by some of former President Donald Trump's anti-immigrant comments. Here's President Joe Biden during a White House event.
He wants to bring back cruel and inhumane family separation policies that rip children from their parents at the border. Folks, that's not who we are.
The family separation policy announced 6 years ago led to the separation of more than 5,000 children from their parents and other adult relatives. Some were infants. Immigration rights groups sued the Trump administration. Here is Lee Gelernt. He is the deputy director of the ACLU Immigrants Rights Project and the leading lawyer in the family separation case.
The ACLU brought the family separation lawsuit in the beginning of 2018, when we learned that the Trump administration was engaging in a practice of taking children from their parents.
Under the policy, families were separated and parents criminally prosecuted for crossing the border illegally. Here's Gelernt again.
We brought the lawsuit called Miss L v. ICE in the federal court in San Diego, a national class action, and ultimately got an injunction from the court, said the policy was likely unconstitutional, was brutal and unconscionable, and that the Trump administration needed to end the practice immediately and reunify all the children it had taken away and had to help us find all these families.
The lawsuit was settled in 2023. Children and relatives who were separated will receive assistance with health care, housing, and legal needs. They will also have access to a fast asylum process and can receive 3 years of humanitarian parole, allowing them to live in the U.S. legally. Still, nearly 1,000 children have yet to be reunited with their parents and relatives. Here's Gelernt again.
And we have been searching for years for all the families that were separated, many of whom are still not found.
In 2018, Trump signed another executive order reversing his administration's family separation policy after a national and international outcry. He has continued to talk tough on border security.
Because we want people to come in, but they have to come in legally.
The Biden administration rolled back Trump's immigration policies, prompting criticism from Republican lawmakers. But Gelernt notes that in December, the court ordered that
for 8 years, no administration may engage in a family separation practice. We would have liked it to have been indefinite.
U.S. border officials can still separate a child from their parents if there is evidence the child is in danger. The separation must be documented. Immigration lawyers must be notified. But if future administrations try to make the separation of families frequent and routine again, immigration lawyers say they're ready to go back to the courts. Aline Barros, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday unveiled steep tariff increases on an array of Chinese imports, including electric vehicles, EV batteries, computer chips, medical products, risking an election year standoff with Beijing as he woos American voters who give his economic policies low marks. Joining us now to talk about this is Kyle Handley, an economist who specializes in international trade at the University of California, San Diego, School of Global Policy and Strategy. So why don't we start just by explaining what happened? What did the Biden administration, what action did they actually take?
Okay. They have put a number of new tariffs on about 18 billion dollars worth of Chinese imports. Most of those tariffs are already elevated because of actions taken by the Trump administration, and the Biden administration is increasing those tariffs. In some cases, it's a 25% new tariff. In other cases, they've increased the tariff up to 100% on electric vehicles from China.
This will likely accelerate a shift of Chinese production to Mexico or Vietnam.
That's definitely possible. So if you look at what happened during the Trump administration and to this day, the Chinese manufacturers were very adept at moving their production to Vietnam, to Mexico, to other factories in Southeast Asia. They were particularly speedy on this with respect to things like washing machines, solar panels, and it's very likely they could do exactly the same thing with batteries and electric vehicles. And it's not clear that the Biden administration has any plan to deal with that.
So what does that mean for me? I go to the store, I go buy a car, I get a computer, I get something that uses a chip, even if it's a Chevrolet mm-hmm. that's made in China. How does this impact me?
So with regard to all the things that they're putting a tariff on, a lot of them are what economists refer to as intermediate inputs or just goods that you used to make other goods. And if you increase the cost, even to a U.S. company like General Motors to buying the semiconductor chips that run the computer in your car, then at some point that's either going to come out of General Motors' profits or it's going to come out of the consumer's pocket because they'll pass some of those costs along. But it won't be obvious why the price of, say, a car or a stereo or some other electronic device is a little bit more expensive.
Do tariff wars still work, or is it a concept of the past?
I don't think tariff wars work particularly well because in most cases, the country that you're raising tariffs on is going to retaliate, and they retaliate on strategic products that are important to the United States in this case. And so there may be some gains that the U.S. can make in terms of national security objectives. They may temporarily be able to prop up employment in some industries that are having trouble competing, but there will absolutely be some form of retaliation. And I think the Chinese have been quite good at targeting sectors that are politically important to both the former Trump and current Biden administration. And those costs are quite concentrated in the industries that get hit hard. Hmm. And that means that these tariff wars and the tit-for-tat nature of them are often self-defeating.
Thank you so much for the time.
You're welcome.
Kyle Handley at the University of California, San Diego, School of Global Policy and Strategy. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Israel's Independence Day celebrations on Tuesday were toned down as the country's war in Gaza and the fight for the release of 128 hostages still held by Hamas dominates events.
Yeah, this year we celebrate with a heavy heart. We're giving space to the fact that there are soldiers right now fighting for our safety and for our ability to celebrate. We are remembering our hostages and praying and hoping that every single one of them comes home. But at the same time, I have a small child, and I want him to be proud to be Israeli, and I want him to see the celebrations and the pride that we have as Jews, as Israelis, that have the right to defend ourselves in our country.
Palestinians on Wednesday will mark the 76th year of their mass expulsion from what is now Israel. It's an event at the core of their national struggle. Palestinians refer to it as the Nakba, and that's Arabic for catastrophe. About 700,000 Palestinians, a majority of the pre-war population, fled or were driven from their homes before and during the 1948 war that followed Israel's establishment. And after the war, Israel refused to allow them to return. And finally, robots are going to sea. Robots are being used more and more for everything from ocean exploration to rescue missions, as we hear in this report from Matt Dibble.
Back and forth across the water goes the Otter, an uncrewed surface vessel, or USV, during a demonstration on the River Thames in London.
That's a autonomous USV, fully electric USV, using sonar technology, collecting data from the seafloor underwater, and stitching that together with GPS mapping so that we can see what the seafloor looked like.
The Otter is appearing at this undersea technology convention in London, along with a wide variety of seafaring robots. The market for underwater robotics is expected to more than triple over the next decade, as technology has evolved to provide a less expensive solution for a variety of missions.
As soon as it hits one.
Previously, you'd have to have a big vessel and big chunky equipment to gather this data. And we've narrowed that down to a single operator sitting at home behind his desk.
Chasing's underwater drones are designed to be versatile, capable of performing inspections of boats and infrastructure, scientific research, and even rescues.
One of our robots, we can attach 20 plus accessories. Let's say for scientific research or for environmental, we got water samplers or sensors. For search and rescues, you can use sonars, imaging sonars, to detect bodies.
And then there are the jobs too dangerous for humans, such as searching for landmines along the shore. Green Sea IQ's bayonet robots are designed to work in the surf zone, where waves are breaking.
What robots and autonomy gives us is it gives us new jobs to do, new ways of working.
Expect to see more robots taking the plunge in coming years. Matt Dibble, VOA News.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform. Get our apps from Google and Apple. And you can see us online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Under the Global Criminal Justice Rewards Program, the State Department offers rewards of up to $5 million to individuals who provide information that leads to the arrest, transfer, or conviction of designated foreign nationals accused of crimes against humanity, genocide, or war crimes. The Global Criminal Justice Rewards Program has been remarkably successful over its lifespan, said Ambassador-at-Large for Global Criminal Justice Beth Van Schaak in a recent interview.
We have spent about $8 million in rewards and have assisted in 20 live cases before international tribunals.
The program is open to almost anyone who has information about these wanted individuals, explained Ambassador Van Schaak.
The only restrictions are that someone who is in a law enforcement capacity or otherwise working in a formal governmental capacity is not eligible to receive a reward. But private persons, even family or friends or acquaintances of the fugitive, they are all eligible for a reward.
The safety and confidentiality of tipsters is of utmost importance to the United States, said Ambassador Van Schaak.
First and foremost, we do not ever reveal their identity publicly at all. Only the person themselves and our program officers will be aware of the identity of the individual providing the information. And then one of the factors we consider in the reward is the amount of money that would be necessary to ensure that the tipster and their family members, if necessary, are safe.
All tips received about fugitives will be evaluated and potentially used to make an arrest, said Ambassador Van Schaak.
If eventually that information ends up helping to identify, find an individual, capture that individual, or convict that individual, then we will make a recommendation to the Secretary of State to pay a reward for that information to that person.
If someone has information about a fugitive, please reach out to the Global Criminal Justice Rewards Program via text message, SMS, or WhatsApp at +1 202 975 5468 or via email at gcjrp@state.gov. You can also bring information to the nearest U.S. Embassy or any U.S. government official. The tip does not have to be big. If you know something, no matter how small, please contact the Global Criminal Justice Rewards Program.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.